Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line our good friend, Jerry Guidetti, who's a science researcher. She's a microbiologist. She's been in genetic science. Her articles appeared worldwide in science journals and magazines and books in many languages. And she's written about the threat to the global food supply. And she's trying to warn people that we have a real problem as far as the food supply is concerned. She's acted as a consultant to CEOs and financial analysts, oil and technology, banking industry executives. And she writes about the expected impact of the biological threat on the United States. Now, for over 2 years, Jerry has been sounding the alarm to those who are willing to hear. The first great influenza pandemic of the 21st century is headed our way, and maybe within a relatively few weeks it may be here, and our country is not prepared to handle it. Billions of people around the world could become sick, and certainly millions of people could die from this disease. A handful of doctors and some of the country's top scientists are joining Jerry and trying to get the word out. And what you must understand is that if you read the newspapers, as I do regularly, you will see articles appearing regularly, week after week, about the danger of a global pandemic. I'm much more concerned, though, about the articles that are being written by the elite who rule the world. And those are the articles that appeared in the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs magazine. And there really is an elite that rule the world. They're known as the Council on Foreign Relations. Here they interlock with the Royal Institute of International Affairs in Great Britain, Canada, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and several of the other Commonwealth nations. But foreign affairs is the flagship of America's invisible government. The people who run our country always come from the Council on Foreign Relations, their magazine. Foreign Affairs is how they inform their people about what's going to happen. And in the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs, three leading articles, all on the danger of a coming global pandemic. And Dr. Osterholm, who wrote the second article, one of the world's leading experts, didn't say if the epidemic is going to come, but when the epidemic comes. And with that, Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think certainly I'm going to let you pick up the story, because I know of your concern and the work you've done about the very real danger we face from this pandemic. The question is it going to jump, you know, in any large numbers from the avian flu virus that we have into the human population?
Well, it appears it certainly is going to jump. It already has jumped species. It's gone into the human population in several countries in Asia. It has become transformed or reassorted and recombined to the degree that it also can be transmitted human to human in small clusters. And now we're at the stage where the clusters are getting larger, not smaller. And that is a sign for virologists, specialists in this field, that the organism, it's not even an organism, the particle, the viral particle, is getting more efficient. It is picking up more human influenza type genes, making it possible to infect humans with greater efficiency.
Hold that thought here, and just a minute, we'll be right back with Jerry Guidetti. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about the possibility of a global pandemic. And one of the interesting things, there have been about 100 people that we know have been infected, at least that was the last count. About 50 of those have died. So this certainly has a tremendous lethality, a tremendous ability to kill human beings, much more so than the average influenza. Now, the question is, what is going to happen as the migratory birds, which are actually carrying this, they've actually killed millions of birds over there in Asia, both in China, Vietnam, Thailand. They're doing everything they can to stop the spread of this within the bird population. But, of course, the question is, what about the migratory birds that are going to be getting up into Russia and Eastern Europe? Are they carrying the disease?
They certainly are. As a matter of fact, the most dangerous changes to occur genetically in this virus have just occurred at Qinghai Lake. It's Qinghai Lake in west central China, where for the first time we have observed it. The birds themselves died from the influenza they were carrying. Generally, they can be asymptomatic. They can carry it, but they themselves are not affected. Well, here you had a massive die-off of birds at Qinghai Lake in China. And you had barheaded geese were the first species to go down, and there were hundreds and then thousands. China admitted that indeed they had a bird kill problem. They had originally reported 800. Then it ended up it was closer to 8,000. Some are saying it's more than that, have died in the lake. And so this normally pristine natural reserve area is now littered with dead bodies on the shore and in the waters. And unfortunately, these birds nest over and breed in that area during the summertime and then leave the area and migrate along very standard flyways to various parts of the world. They go, for example, by a southern route. They go to southern areas of the Asian continent. They go down to Australia, New Zealand. They have another flyway that goes to Alaska here in the United States, another one that goes into Russia and so on. And what we've seen is, because cold has come a little early here in China, in the Qinghai region, the birds have begun to take off a little early, and as a result, there has been a very rapid spread of the bird flu or avian influenza across the rest of the continent. For example, we had cases appear in Russia, in Siberia. Then from one little town in Siberia, it went to three or four different towns, and the Russians began killing off birds like crazy, poultry. It was a very large, concentrated poultry industry area.
Jerry, go ahead.
Yes. So there was a lot of birds dying in the Siberian area, and then four towns were affected, and all of a sudden the Russians moved in and began to kill off tens of thousands of chickens in the area in order to get it under control. Now we find out from a news agency that they have a death of humans. Human-to-human transmission is possible, but at least the death of four humans being reported in a Chinese news service online called Baxun, which the Chinese government has tried to shut down by arresting 17 of the reporters who are releasing information on human deaths. We have that occurring in another area of China as well. So what you have here is out of Qinghai Lake, it went to Siberia, then it went to Kazakhstan, and there's a possibility of deaths in Kazakhstan, and then on across, the birds are headed toward the Caspian and the Black Seas. And for those of you who have maps available, you'll see that these areas are very close to the Middle East. They go over the Ural Mountains, which puts them in the eastern portion of Europe, and predictions are now that the avian influenza is marching rapidly to Europe. In fact, the Europeans are just today announcing that they are going to be doing some dry run exercises for this pandemic. Great Britain, for example, is now being told to prepare for disaster, and they're talking about how many of the folks in Britain are going to be infected, how many are going to die, and so on. Europe is beginning to take this very seriously, and I shouldn't even use the word beginning, because they have been much more tuned in to what could happen than we have here in the United States. Our officials, they're getting on board now, but it's too little too late, unfortunately, to really nip this thing in the bud. The Europeans have been stockpiling Tamiflu, which is one of the antivirals. There are now, in the varieties of antivirals, there are three that have been used in the past. Tamiflu is one, amantadine is another one, and we've got one of the bird flu varieties heading for Europe is actually amantadine sensitive. There is a variety in Vietnam that is developed or has developed amantadine resistance. And so you've got this situation where this H5N1, and we haven't even mentioned what it looks like, but this H5N1 virus actually has been changing at a rate that is mind-boggling. It has been picking up, the term is humanization, has been picking up genes from human influenza, incorporating it into its own genome, and making it possible for it to be more efficient at infecting humans. We fear, all scientists fear, that the mutations are going to occur, the changes are going to occur in such a way that you are going to have such efficiency that this thing is going to take off from human to human. It won't need birds anymore. It won't matter about the flyways. And when that happens, it's literally going to be around the world in a matter of a week or two. We've already seen some signs of these changes taking place. We've got fingers and toes crossed, and everybody scrambling to try to get ready. But the reality is, if this thing changes enough, it's going to be like the SARS virus, where 24 hours later, after it arose in China, it ended up in, I believe, 5 countries in 24 hours. That's all it takes. It's only one jet plane ride away. It's one auto ride away if you're on the same continent. It's one train ride away. This can be carried easily. As a matter of fact, most people who get it don't tend to show symptoms for about 24 hours, and they are contagious during that 24 hours, so it's very possible for it to be given to your loved ones and get on a train, feel perfectly fine, and then go downhill so fast that you are on death's door in a matter of 24 to 48 hours.
Well, I think the important thing is that should this epidemic occur, people are going to have to just stay home and not go into any place where they're going to come into contact with it. That's what they did in 1918 with the flu epidemic, and they just did everything simply shut down. This is the point that Dr. Osterholm makes in his article in Foreign Affairs magazine. It was really rather fascinating as you read it, as he's contemplating what the future may hold. Now, he's certainly looked upon as one of the world's leading experts on this field.
Absolutely.
And he talks about not if, but when something like this is going to happen. Are they trying to scare us to death? Is this a real problem? Well, I quite frankly don't know whether they're trying to scare us to death or whether something's going to happen, but I think we have to be very, very concerned about it. And one of the points he makes in his article is that there would be a breakdown in the food delivery system, that people would have to be prepared, you know, to simply stop engaging in regular commerce and regular contacts over a period perhaps of many, many weeks. Why? Because food would not be coming in, and you wouldn't want to go out and be buying your food. The last thing you would want, if this terrible thing should come to pass, and there was a global pandemic, would be go into a food store or any place else where you would come in contact with other beings who might harbor the virus. So what you have to do is really be almost prepared to be able to survive on your own for a matter of some weeks. Now, this seems like such a preposterous concept. And yet when you find three lead articles in Foreign Affairs magazine, which is published by the people who really run the world, you have to wonder what they're telling the elite. And are the elite making preparations for themselves? Because I will tell you, our government is making no preparations for our people. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, no, they're not. And one of the major problems with the food supply, you see, is that we have to figure, the most conservative of scientists are saying that you have to figure on between 25% and 33%, conservatively, will be infected in each and every society. And this isn't your normal influenza infection. If you've had flu before, you know you feel awful. This is a whole world different. This is orders of magnitude of difference. You can bleed rectally. You can vomit blood. You have bleeding under the skin in some of the latest varieties that are mutating. You have high fever. You cannot drink. You cannot eat. You can dehydrate to death unless you have some loving person who's going to drip water into your mouth over many hours to try to get you rehydrated again, or you end up one of the lucky ones who gets it in the first day or two of the pandemic and you actually get into a hospital. But the hospitals are going to shut down. They're going to be overwhelmed in a matter of a couple of days. You literally are going to be left on your own, or there'll be makeshift top hospitals and gymnasiums and things like that. So take a look at that picture and you look at the food supply and you say, all right, if that is what's going to be going on, well, then these people aren't going to be reporting to the farm, reporting for their tractor duty, reporting for their canning operation. The machines will be down because there'll be nobody to run them. What's going to happen is our just-in-time food system is going to stop just in the shortest bit of time, and folks who are used to just going to stores and picking up groceries and so on and don't have stocks in their house for quite a long period of time are going to be in trouble so fast.
Well, I think that when we see Dr. Osterholm, and I would suggest if any of our listeners are out there, to get a copy of the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs magazine and read Dr. Osterholm's article. I mean, it was very, very disturbing to me that an internationally renowned physician would be writing there, whether he's a physician or public health official, I'm not really certain. You probably know that, Jerry.
He has a Ph.D. He is a public health official. He is the chair of the Centers for Infectious Disease and something else of University of Minnesota. And he also consults with and works with the Department of Homeland Defense because he himself is responsible for leading the program for preventing bioterrorism in the food supply. So he looks at food, but he also, as you know, Dr. Stan, from that article, he's also looking at he's given speeches to American Bankers Association, for example, telling them, and what are you planning on doing with your banks during this time? What do you how do you think your portfolios are going to be behaving during this time? What about commerce? There isn't going to be commerce. The world travel is going to shut down overnight. And this is from a scientist who tends to be conservative, as most scientists are. They are not given to speaking hyperbole. They're not given to alarmist kinds of points of view. They have to have evidence for what they're saying. And this man professionally has stuck his neck way out there by being the first Paul Revere to sound the alarm on this thing from the professional community.
All right, fine. Well, I think that this is a very real concern, and it should be for everybody. And you should be beginning to make your preparations if this terrible thing should come to pass. Remember that the people who run the world, are informing the people that in the elite what's going to happen. Three articles in Foreign Affairs magazine about the coming flu pandemic. Well, I think that it's something you should think about. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. Of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course the major thing that we're going to have to watch is see how much of this spreads into the human beings. The fact that they have actually sacrificed millions of birds over there in Asia trying to control this, and they haven't done a very good job. Now, of course, the disease is into the migratory birds, but it is the type of virus. It's a different type of virus. And it has such a high lethality, it's very, very lethal, not only for birds, but for those unfortunate people who contract the disease. The fact that this epidemic has actually spread from the birds into the human beings, and then apparently from human being to human being, that is the big threat that we're really concerned about. Okay. Well, Jerry, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Sure. I think it really pays for us to look at history and take a look at the last great pandemic of the last century, and every single century has great pandemics for as long as there is recorded history. So we're nothing special here. We are just as prone as anyone else, any other century. Even though we have modern medicine, we are prone to the same kind of catastrophe for the human race, and now even more so because of travel, rapid travel, and how many of us there are. So let's look for comparison. At today's population of 6.6 billion people in the world, in 1918, there was only 1.6 billion people, and they were quite spread out, and there wasn't global travel like there is anywhere near today. Now, for further comparison, the 1918 pandemic killed, it's estimated, anywhere from 20 to 50 million. Latest evidence points to the 50 million figure. That was a death rate of only 2.5% among those infected. 2.5% of those infected among a population of 1.6 billion. Now take that figure and look at today with our 6.6 billion. And we have an average, now I'm looking at the figures as we speak, of 51.6% fatalities in those humans infected, and that's Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, Indonesia. Now we're looking at Kazakhstan, we're looking at China. We've got 51.6%. Now, if you take your 6.6 billion people today and figure one-third of those are going to be infected, minimum one-third if this thing goes human to human, you're looking at over 2 billion. Now, take that number, 51.6%, if it held on to that fatality rate, and you're looking at well north of a billion people. You're looking at tens of millions of people in the United States. And this isn't considered an overstatement.
Well, Chris, we don't know, though, that it's going to become readily spreadable from individual. There's a possibility, though, that it could, and that's why we should be concerned, because there are obviously some very well-informed people who are concerned about this. And what's really so interesting is that the government now is beginning to lay in vaccine supplies, but I don't trust the vaccines, quite frankly, and there's no evidence necessarily that this is going to be effective against this specific strain. They can say it's going to be, but we know how effective sometimes their past influenza vaccines have been. They're laying in supplies of Tamiflu, but if you look at some of the studies on Tamiflu, you'd have to take an awful lot of Tamiflu to really escape this. So there are things that we really need to be thinking about, and we're going to be talking about those in just a minute as we get back here with our special guest this evening, Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about the fact that the people who run the world and would really like to see a massive depopulation warning about the coming pandemic. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Sydney, we've had a couple of callers call in and didn't want to come on the air. We will get to their questions a little bit later. Somebody asked about freeze-dried food, and another people says that they want to know more about what's coming down the line. Now, as far as what's happening over in Asia today, has the epidemic among the birds quieted down now, or are they still sacrificing more and more of the birds? Do we know what's going on there? And what about this virus getting into the pigs? This was some concern.
Well, yes. It's a good thing I come from the the East Coast, because I can talk very fast. There is so much going on that you'd have to catch your breath trying to keep up with it. First of all, they're killing off I would say there are hundreds of millions of birds have been culled, a nice word for killed, in Asia, and still the thing is spreading, and it ended up going possibly from domestic poultry to the wild, or from the wild to domestic, where they began changing in chickens and ducks and so on.
Now, and it is in both chickens and in ducks, and then in wild birds as well.
Wild birds, chickens, ducks, geese. Now, unfortunately, the changes have occurred. Again, this thing is evolving. As you and I speak, the thing is evolving. And now the breadth of its infectivity in birds is greatly increased, and they have found them in swans and some of the other more exotic birds as it's crossing over into across Russia and into Kazakhstan and so on. They're finding dead birds of so many species. It's the saddest thing.
Now, is this actually posted on the Internet? Because I know you're following this through a lot of the information that is there that the average person isn't have access to. How can people get some of the information on the epidemic? And I know, of course, you're putting out a newsletter, aren't you?
It's an advisory, yes. We are putting out of the York Institute, we are putting out a monthly advisory. We are so concerned about people being misled by articles in paper that give half stories, half truths. I witnessed the vaccine article, which I can talk to you about shortly. But we're concerned about people not putting the whole picture together, people who are taking comfort from the thought that there's a vaccine available. Nothing could be further than the truth, from the truth. There is not a vaccine available for H5N1. There is a seed vaccine, the start of one, that Dr. Fauci announced yesterday, or was it the day before? And that one has shown some immunity, some good immunity in 113 people it was tested on. However, it has to be given in high doses, maybe up to 12 times what is normally given in a regular flu vaccine. We don't even have enough, not even for a million people. We wouldn't have enough for the strain coming through at the time the pandemic happens. We don't even know if it would be effective. Consider that a seed vaccine, a first start. Unfortunately, Dr. Fauci, and he probably didn't mean it that way, but unfortunately he said in the press, we have a vaccine. That is the headline newspapers picked up on, and folks shouldn't get comfortable and think this is not a problem. There will be no vaccine for any of us, you, me, any of the regular people in the country. There won't be a vaccine available for us if this thing hits within a year.
I know Fauci, we crossed swords when we were involved with the AIDS epidemic.
There you go.
And Dr. Fauci was one of the architects of the current effort to stop the AIDS epidemic, where, of course, in many parts of Africa, 20, 30, 40% of the adult population is infected. Do we really want to trust our future to Dr. Fauci of the National Institute of Health, who is one of the architects of the current failed AIDS policy? We've lost 500,000 people in this country from AIDS. Another over 1 million are infected. We have a failed public health policy on that. Are we going to look to these people to protect us from if this epidemic actually does spread in the United States? And I would like to suggest that people are going to have to start thinking about how they're going to protect themselves and their families. And I think there are certain things that you want to do in preparation. I think certainly you want to get your immune system the best possible shape that it can possibly be in. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But then the other thing is you need to begin making some preparations that if the unthinkable should happen, and we'll just going to have to wait and see, but there are many, many warning flags out there, especially when they're warning the elite of this nation and of the rest of the world of this potentiality, then you're going to have to start making preparations to look after yourself and after your family. So we'll be back here in just a moment or two with Jerry Guidetti. Mike is hanging on very patiently. I'll ask him to hang on, and we'll try to take his call during the coming break. So, and then, of course, when we get... but hold your calls, I think, until after Jerry has said basically what she wants to say, and then we'll open up our lines for you. We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti of the ARC Institute. And Jerry is trained in genetic engineering. She's well aware of the scientific things. She's right on the cutting edge of this. And she's going to tell you how you can, if you'd like to, get a sample copy of her newsletter. And we'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. Let's go to Mike here. We'll take him briefly, and then we'll get back to Jerry. Mike, did you have a question at all for our guest?
Well, yeah. I remember about 7 years ago, I believe it was Korea, decided they had to wipe out all their chickens because they were diseased. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, I think almost waiting right offshore, with Tyson food, with amazingly just enough chicken to resupply Korea with all their needs.
And I think it was Hong Kong as well, as I remember. Did Jerry?
1997, Hong
yeah.
Kong.
It wasn't yeah. that Hong Kong. Yeah, that was in Hong Kong. And you're absolutely right. They killed off all the chickens, and the next thing, there was Tyson food ready to come in with their chickens.
One couldn't help but wonder if there ever really was anything wrong with the chickens, or if something was given to the chickens to kill them just to make Tyson a nice tidy profit.
Well,
you know, of course, they were good friends with Bill Clinton, President of the United States at the time.
Well, of course, the thing is that it was the domestic authorities that did eliminate the chickens. I think that there was a bird flu at that time, but certainly Tyson would be there ready to exploit the situation. What are your thoughts on that, Jerry?
I'll tell you what. There is evidence of influenza, avian influenza, back, way, way back. We can find this, you know, there's a fossil record even in bacteria and viruses. And you can find avian influenza has existed just forever. However, I'm not discounting, Mike, that some people might find it easy to use that to their advantage. But I make another, however, and that is the reason these things have not been used widely as bioterrorist weapons and weapons to destroy populations is because they cannot be controlled. You can put out a certain form, and the Chinese have done that research, Russia's done that research, the former Soviet Union, I am sure the United States has done that research as well, and you can put something out that you think you can control, but they know better. When you look at it, you see how pliable, how plastic a virus is, how many changes take place, you realize, my gosh, this thing's going to come back to bite me. And that's precisely what happens. They come back to bite them. So it's not the kind of thing that you could release unless you released it underneath a bubble or you realized it was going to get rid of everyone all over the planet. Everybody's going to starve to death. And you say, the heck with it, I'm going to go to, you know, the old suicide bomber idea. If I go, everybody goes, or I'm going to take a lot of people with me. But I personally think that whether these things arose, and we should handle the pigs in Sichuan, China as an example, if people think that these things arose from bioterrorism warfare or from a corporate elite or so on, you can say they, if I give you that and say, yes, that's the way it happened, fine.
Hold that thought, Jerry. Sure. We're going to have to bring our other program stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Mike calling from Santa Cruz, who brought up the subject of the epidemic that occurred in Hong Kong back about 1997, where they actually killed off most of the chickens in Hong Kong. And, of course, Mike commented that Tyson Chickens was suddenly there. They were there with chickens to replace all those dead chickens, and they, of course, made a bundle out of that. It was Jerry's point and Jerry's response that, you know, it might very well be that certainly that Tyson would take advantage of this sort of a situation, but it would be very, very dangerous to unleash any sort of a major epidemic worldwide because, of course, it could kill literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, and you couldn't control it. So if people were thinking about doing this from a biological point of view, from a biowarfare point of view, that they would either have to have a cure for themselves or treatment for themselves, or maybe they would have bunkers they could go to. But if you were to unleash something like this on the world, it would kill not only people in foreign countries, but in your own country as well. And nobody would be that foolish, or would they? Well, let's get on. Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to ask before we let you go?
About these avian flus and whatever viruses are out there, it seems like they can almost engineer about anything they want.
Yes, they can.
Look what they've done with AIDS and its selectivity towards blacks, for example.
Can I comment on that, Mike, in a heck of a hurry here? Yes, we can engineer those viruses. There's no doubt about it, we can engineer them. But once you engineer them and you put them out, the virus does its thing. It's not truly an organism. It cannot live on its own. It cannot retain its own genetic makeup. What it depends upon is another living cell in order for it to take control of that cell inside another organism, a living organism, And it has to take control of that genetics, and it has to force its own replication. It takes over, commandeers the genetic apparatus of the cell, and it makes its own, repeats itself or makes its own copies, and that cell then releases these copies out into the environment, out of the organism. So if you have genetically engineered or modified a virus with the hopes of taking over the world or killing off, just as you gave the example of just black folks or yellow folks or brown folks or whatever, and these are racially targeted or so on, there is no way that you could make that virus stay the same when, in fact, it depends upon other infecting other organisms in order to replicate its RNA or, in some cases, DNA for different kinds of viruses. So it's if you were an evil mind, it's a great plan, but it wouldn't work in this current world because of the fact that a virus depends on other things to infect and would change. You'd lose control of it. If you did it, you'd be a very stupid person. You'd be a person who basically has a death wish or just doesn't know any better.
Okay, thanks so much, Mike. And let's go. I'm going to just ask, we have another caller, but I'm going to suggest that Bill hang on because I really want to get Jerry's material out
here. Oh, yeah, I do want to do
and
that.
And so you go ahead, Jerry.
Sure, sure. I am writing an advisory. I am so very concerned that people get the truth and that they get the latest information so that they know what to look for if this thing starts happening. So we've got an advisory. The ARC Institute is helping to support me to put it out, and we will send this monthly to you. You can arrange to get it by email, too. What you need to do is call the 800 number for the ARC Institute. Folks are there now. Be patient if the phone's ringing too much. It's 1-800-255-1912. 1-800-255-1912. And we'll send you out the initial issue I wrote that has all of the history in it, and it kind of gives you an idea of where we're going to be going over the next few months. We're going to be dealing with everything from the medical care of yourselves at home during forced quarantine, Tamiflu, how you can make it stretch out so it could serve several people in your family, these kinds of things. And the information will come from the very top minds, the best, most respected people I can dig up, people I know, people whose work is highly respected around the world, folks who will give us information on medical care of family members at home, and try to help you through this, because if it hits this season, by the way, estimates are November through April of this year, this flu season, November 2005 through April 2006 is when they expect this may come. Now, if God is merciful and gives us a year to prepare, we might even have some kind of a seed vaccine out there to work with. We might even have a little bit more Tamiflu to work with, but right now the United States is the least prepared of all developed countries, and I do think some of the press releases you're seeing out there are great diversion and cover for that fact. They're making it sound like they are getting millions upon millions of doses of this drug that helps to save your life once you get it. This Tamiflu, for example, because it is Tamiflu sensitive, the reality is there is nowhere near the amount of Tamiflu needed for this population. We have enough in this country for 1% of the U.S. population, when in fact, remember those numbers, the best scientists are saying 25 to 33%. Do you know Great Britain has enough for 33 to 40%? New Zealand, Australia, other European countries have enough to take care of 25 to 40% of their populations. We here in the United States currently have 1%. We are trying to import some. Countries are not wanting to give it up, and they're going to be less likely even to give up viruses, and we have precious little virus manufacturing capacity here in the United States. All of our money for years has been going someplace else, and I know you know where it's been going for the past 5 to 6 years.
And I would point out that Great Britain has actually laid in a supply of Tamiflu for their population, about a third, somewhere around there.
That's correct.
They have enough for a third of their population, and other countries are preparing to protect their people. because there is this feeling among the elite of the world that this epidemic is going to come. Isn't it interesting that the American government, the most powerful, wealthy government in the world, a country that consumes 80% of the savings of this world, we're spending money for all sorts of things. We've just actually came up with a $5 billion guarantee for development of nuclear power in communist China. But and we are appropriated, I don't know, we've wasted probably $300 or more billion over in Iraq, between $300 and $400 billion. Right. However, we can't provide the Tamiflu supplies for the American people, that the British can provide for their people, that people in other countries can provide. So is there any good websites, or how about your website? Do you have
information
up there?
Okay, sure. Go to the ARK Institute's website. That's ARKInstitute.com, ARKInstitute.com. We're keeping you abreast of the times that I'm doing radio programs. We're going to have all the information you need up there to get a copy of the advisory free. It gives you the history and so on. You can then arrange to get the advisory every month. You can arrange to get it by email, too, if you'd like to get it by email. I would strongly advise people do this. I would also strongly advise that as we cover topic by topic, how to do the food supply thing, how to make electrolyte solutions at home, easy solutions that you can use to replenish moisture in people who are suffering, perhaps dying of flu in your own household. Horrible things to talk about, but there are physicians' monographs out there, too, on the Internet. Physicians have put together monographs to try to help their own patients to deal with this, because the reality is you may be forced to take care of your own ill and dying relatives because, and you don't believe me, go to the CDC's website, look at the pandemic disaster plan. It isn't even completed as up to today. They stopped in 2004. It was supposed to be completed already. But part of it is the mandatory quarantines if voluntary doesn't work, and you will be quarantined to your own home if this thing takes off. And there won't be schools. You won't have public meeting places. You may be quarantined into your own home at the worst of this. And keep in mind that this goes in waves, that most pandemics have one huge wave, a bunch of people die off, then you have maybe 3 to 8 months, and a second wave comes through, kills off a whole lot more people who didn't get killed off the first time, and then finally it either dies or you get a smaller third wave. And then when there are no more infections, then they could officially say that the pandemic is over. We're looking at, Stan, between 1 and 3 years if this thing makes this last mutation for human-to-human transmission efficiently.
Well, I would suggest that people begin considering what would happen, you know, if this thing should strike, because it would mean you wouldn't want to go to the grocery store. You wouldn't want to go even to the hospital to visit anybody, because this would be spread within hospitals. It would spread from person-to-person contact. This is the great fear that they have. And obviously, the elite know something that we don't. All you need to do is simply go up on the Internet and begin pulling down some of these articles and begin trying to put them into some perspective. Why are they announcing that they have a vaccine when, of course, they really don't have a vaccine? They have no trials on these vaccines to know whether they're going to hit this specific type of virus. And I mean, what have they given it to, 100 people or something? And
113 people were
113, you know.
Yeah, it was 452 people. 113 they did the blood draws on. And they found that after increasing a dose, they had to have booster shots, by the way, because it's not like boosting a virus that you've already been exposed to before. This one you have to start from scratch because we have no experience with it in our immune systems. And so they have to boost it. Now, Dr. Fauci did say that it is fraught with problems for production. For example, this virus is so bad, and he didn't say this, but I'll tell you from other researchers that I know, this virus is so bad that it kills the chicken embryos. That they use the eggs to create the vaccine. The eggs are now, which came first, the chicken or the egg, Dr. Stan? The chickens that are all being killed off in order to squash this flu, they're not laying eggs anymore, are they? Where do you get more eggs for more chickens? Where do you get more eggs for more vaccines? So it takes a very special clean egg, too, in order to be qualified to make vaccines out of. So So if we had the perfect, if we knew the strain that came through and we have the perfect match and we know what the pandemic strain looks like, and Dr. Fauci's lab and the commercial producer got a hold of this and they began to make vaccine, at the very best, we could expect it 6 to 9 months later in small quantities. How about that number?
Well, I certainly am very, very dubious about any sort of a vaccine,
yes,
because the flu vaccine that they ordinarily give us is not for the strain that that we're having at this time. And if you really look at the statistics for the influenza vaccines that we've used for a number of years, their major effect has been to create Alzheimer's disease in the elderly because they had aluminum and mercury in them. And Dr. Fudenberg's studies suggested 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease and very little benefit as far as preventing death in the elderly. So, you know, can we really depend upon the people who've given us these problems in the past? So they know what they're doing. They have an agenda. And we aren't privy to everything, but all we can do is tell people, be concerned. Follow this along closely, and we'll be bringing you the cutting-edge information here at Radio Liberty as we see the spreading of the epidemic now, beginning at least among the birds, spreading out over into Central Asia. Now, has it gotten at all into human beings in that area at all, Jerry?
In Central Asia, there is a report, and I may have mentioned it before, but in Kazakhstan, there is a report from a news agency that says that there are 4 humans infected.
All right.
So it looks like it's happening. Now, Russia is claiming that in Mongolia there are no human infections yet. So I'm hoping that Russia remains transparent and continues to report it. In China, we have a far different story. And, you know, SARS arose there and it, again, went to 5 countries in 24 hours. We're very nervous about that pig infection that has killed maybe upward of 200 to 212 people. They're calling it Streptococcus suis. I can tell you Streptococcus suis does not drop a person in 2 to 10 hours dead. It doesn't spread to 40 townships in a few days.
Well, for our listeners over there, there has been an outbreak of a disease in the pigs there that has been apparently has really been very, very lethal.
Very lethal.
And how is that getting into the human beings as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and that's what's happening. People are killing them. Don't forget, these are people who live hand to mouth. These are subsistence farmers and so on. They are very hungry. They have to make a living, and so they get a herd that gets infected. They quickly slaughter it and send the meat out, and they eat it themselves. Well, they have been coming down with this horrible disease. Now, Boxen has claimed that they have isolated 7 varieties of Ebola virus from the pigs in addition to the Streptococcus suis. Now, the folks are bleeding under their skin. It is hemorrhagic. Scientists are questioning the following. Could it be Crimean hemorrhagic or Ebola from a warfare program?
So there is then a question of this being either Ebola or Marburg type of virus.
Yes, that's right. And the question is also, or is it the mutated H5N1, which in 1918 and in some cases today is producing these subcutaneous hemorrhages that make a person go to blue-black in a matter of hours? And that's what's happening there in China, although Boxen is claiming that it's Ebola. Boxen is a Chinese news agency that is not the official Chinese news agency, but their information has always been accurate before. They accurately told us about SARS and revealed it to the world when SARS was going through, when China was trying to cover it up. So China arrested 17 Boxen reporters, young people, who were putting this word out on the internet, but we can still get a hold of some of them, and we're machine translating them, which makes them very awkward translations. However, someone did communicate with them last week and asked them could they provide some English translations on the spreading disease, and they have given us a few. Now, the interesting thing is the Chinese went in there and they razed, as in scraped bare, 2 villages, took the people out who were infected, literally destroyed the villages and brought in big blades and razed them and burned all of the parts of the village. Something major is going on there. The World Health Organization has begged the Chinese to let them come in and take samples as they did at Qinghai Lake, and the Chinese have denied them.
Now, this is what, in the last 2 weeks or so?
That's in the last, about two and a half weeks. This has been going on, and the press is calling it pig flu. Sounds so innocuous. Keep in mind that a pig is like a test tube into which you put avian influenza and human influenza, and it can be infected by both. That's where the mixing occurs. That's why all of the viruses that arise every year come out into humans changed with all of these different genes. It's because they go into pigs where there are high pig concentrations in China, farmed in backyard situations that aren't ideal, and we get this this change.
Well, of course, we're living in exciting times, and you know, of course, with the our attention being focused on what's going on in Iraq by the media, as the casualty count of both of the Iraqi civilians and the American troops increases day by day. All right, we're looking over there, and of course, we're not watching what's going on here. Let's get your telephone number out one more time, Jerry.
1-800-255-1912. The advisory will send you one free.
1-800. One more time, the telephone.
1-800-255-1912.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and we're going to just be wrapping up the program. We've got about 3 minutes, Jerry, to share your thoughts with our listeners.
Well, I would like to warn everyone to keep their ear to the ground. Don't rely on newspaper stories. On TV stories, some of the best and brightest are making errors right and left or putting out incomplete stories because they have deadlines, limited money, and they don't understand science. We strongly recommend that you begin to search the Internet if you are on the Internet and go to our site, take a look at other bird flu sites that are specifically there for bird flu so at least you can read the news and start to make some decisions. We're happy here to be introducing the advisory so we can do some of that translation for you and get the word out, and we ask people please begin to put food in the house, canned food. Begin to store water. They expect water and electric systems may go down because of so many people sick if this thing arrives.
Now, let's get that to your website once again.
ARK Institute.com, ARKInstitute.com, or ARKInstitute at AOL.com for the email address to talk to us by email. And also, we strongly recommend that you look at the fact that the agricultural system, farming, may go down, maybe a season, if this comes through at the right or wrong time, no matter how you look at it. If we don't have food going to canners, and canners aren't putting things up, you're going to end up in trouble. We strongly recommend that you look at starting a garden next year. Store your seeds during the winter time. Have a garden next year. Start preserving your own food. This pandemic is a when, not an if. It's a matter of whether it will come this November through April or next year. It doesn't need to be the flu season. It could hit us in the summertime as these birds migrate. It could come here on the next jet plane, land here in Seattle. Seattle's making excellent plans. It may have a stopover in Kansas, go to New York, and there we have spread it across the country. Willy-nilly, 1, 2, 3. Keep in touch with us. Keep in touch with our advisory to find out the meds that you're supposed to be getting in. Talk to your physicians about it. They are needing to be educated, but they are starting to be educated more and more now. Bring them along. Bring your communities along. Bring the information to your mayor. Ask them, what are the plans? How are you going to handle this if this comes just 2 months from now? What are our emergency services? How many masks do we have for our emergency services?
Well, hold that thought right there. Sure. Jerry will be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Jerry Guidetti of the ARK Institute. And of course, Jerry was commenting on the importance of being able to know how to have a garden, how to grow things. Why don't you get out your website just one more time, the ARK Institute? I know that you have information on seeds and how to grow things. How can people get in touch with the ARK Institute and your telephone number one more time?
Okay, the telephone number is 1-800-255-1912, and the ARK Institute's website is arkinstitute.com. You will find information there on the kind of seeds that you can save for years and grow your own food for years if you had to. I pray it's not going to come to that, but certainly it's going to help you get healthy, because as Dr. Stan says, it's very important that you get your body healthy before this comes, because one of the things we learned in 1918 is that not everyone gets sick. If your immunity is high, you take care of yourself, you have a better chance of not getting sick or perhaps as sick as the other person, and you have a better chance at survival. So be sure you're eating extremely well, get some vitamins in, take herbs that tend to boost your immune system before it arrives. And if you are lucky enough to get some Tamiflu from your physician through your pharmacist, remember, don't take it as a preventative. Take it, the best minds here in the field are now saying take it only if you come down with it, because there isn't enough for you to take it for prevention. When you stop taking it for prevention, you will get sick, and there will be nothing left for you to take.
All right, we're out of time, Jerry. God bless you.
God bless you.
We'll talk to you later.
Too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Jerry Guidetti, and Jerry is very concerned, and I think with good justification. I am concerned because I see the people who rule the world, who have an agenda, warning the elite exactly what lies ahead. Somebody had called in and asked whether or not things like Alamax, other products would be helpful. Yes, in fact, we'll be doing some programs on that, but let me just suggest that products like Alamax, that is a garlic product, will help you build up your immune system. Vitamin C, vitamin D, selenium, these are all important things, and we'll do some programs with Bill Sardi, and we'll make those available to you. How to build up your immune system. Now, you need to have your maximum immunity if this epidemic should strike. It's a good idea to do it anyway, because we'll have a flu season coming in November. But if it is this very lethal form of flu that they are so concerned about, and I would simply ask you, why are they focusing our attention on this? Why are they writing these articles warning the elite? Why are they in other countries laying in large supplies of the only antibiotic seems to be in the least bit effective against this, and not laying any supplies in here in the United States? There are a lot of unanswered questions, ladies and gentlemen, and we hope many of you will get the material from Radio Liberty on genocide, on population control. There is a population control agenda. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. Read about the Georgia Guidestones that call for maintaining the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, but that really doesn't seem too bad. And as you understand, they're talking about the loss of over 90% of the world's population. And if you haven't, of course, heard my talk on Nundare call it genocide, or on population control, or our the 4-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians, which, of course, is an interview with Dr. Dennegan, who heard the head of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Richard Day, back in 1969, talking about the plan to dramatically limit the population of the world, to withhold treatments for cancer, and to create new diseases. That's the New Order of the Barbarians. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, directly or indirectly, and not get much accomplished, but you'll get a lot of information you need. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. Till then, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But as a battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Andrew Skousen. We're going to be talking about current events. We're going to be talking about the things that you can read about on World Affairs Brief, which I read every morning. There's a fascinating survey of all the important news. There's so much news up on the Internet, and you can get lost reading all of these articles. Well, fortunately, Andrew and Skousen, his brother, Derek, and they actually have a crew that works with them, feeding them information, important articles, and they're all pretty well consolidated there. They have a little brief summary of them, and then, of course, you want to link to the article and read the entire article. Why, it is available, and it's a wonderful source of information. That's www.worldaffairsbrief.com. And now, coming to us from the Nevada is Andrew Skousen. Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Just fine. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. Tell us about what the latest issues are in the World Affairs Brief. Now, for our listeners, Joel Skousen, Andrew's dad, puts out a summary of the important issues every week, and of course we get it by email. It gives us sort of an interpretation of what's going on four or five major issues, and that's what we ordinarily would talk about with Andrew or with Derek. So what are the issues we're going to talk about tonight?
There's some interesting developments that have come to light recently about the various prisons that are secretly part of the U.S. Prison system, most of which are in other countries. I'd like to comment a little bit on that.
These are the prisons where capture the people that we think may be terrorists, and we sent them off to other countries to be tortured, because, of course, we're above that sort of thing. We're a moral nation, so we send them to other countries to be tortured?
That's right. That's exactly right, I'm sorry to say.
Now, how can a moral Christian nation do something like that? That's in total violation of all laws of international warfare, and certainly in violation of the Geneva Convention. I don't care how you twist it. I mean, it doesn't matter how terrible the Islamic people are, and that they behead people and that they torture people. Should we be sending people to Muslim countries to be tortured? And how can we possibly justify that as a Christian people? And if we're not speaking out against it, you know, then we become accomplices to the evils we fail to oppose.
It's true. Insofar as we know about them, I'm sorry to say that many people don't spend the time it takes to figure this kind of information out, which I think is why it's important that we do our best to provide people with this information. Because I think if the general population knew about this, that the outcry would easily be strong enough that all of this would be stopped immediately. But unfortunately, that's only going to happen if the press makes a big deal about it, and the press doesn't stir anything that they shouldn't.
No, of course, there have been a fair number of articles in the New York Times. I will give them credit for that. And of course, that's because they're violently anti-Bush, but that doesn't mean that the articles aren't true, and there's been enough information on many sources that we know that these things really are happening. And the CIA has a whole fleet of planes that they're using to transport people to other countries where they're tortured. Now, that cannot be justified under any manner or means. In fact, if you talk to people who actually are interrogators, they will tell you you get far more out of the average individual by being nice to them than by being cruel and vicious with them.
That's right, which brings up an interesting question. What exactly is the point of the U.S., you know, going to all these extremes to torture so many people and to make so many people unhappy in these terrible circumstances that they put them in. Obviously, in Guantanamo Bay, most of the prisoners weren't major sources of military intelligence, etc., that they were just overstepping their bounds in interrogating purposes to try to get people. They were actually trying to make life as terrible as possible.
Well, I think that what we were really trying to do was antagonize and inflame the entire Islamic world.
Exactly.
What our leaders have intentionally done is try to inflame the Islamic world. Why would you do that? Because you need an enemy. If you're going to have a war, if you're going to have World War III, why we're going to have the Muslims hate us, and then we're going to have our people hate the Muslims. That's how you get a war going. And believe me, they're doing everything they can. The leaders who are working behind the scenes, who actually, you know, release those initial pictures of the horrible treatment of the prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison, they didn't have to let that out. They did let it out. And, of course, they did that, and by so doing, they knew they were going to inflame the people of the world. They knew the same thing was going to happen when they released those prisoners, pictures of the prisoners at Abu Ghraib, kneeling there with their blinders on so they couldn't see anything, and earmuffs so they couldn't hear anything, and their orange jumpsuit and manacles kneeling on the ground. That was designed to inflame the Islamic population.
That's
go ahead.
True. And some of the various leaks that have come out about some of the treatment about prisoners, some of the accounts about mistreatment of the Quran, etc. I think that some of those are purposely leaked out to inflame the Muslim population, which is fairly easy to do. Quite honestly, it doesn't take much to ignite a tinderbox like that, and they're definitely doing a very good job of it. Which I don't know if I quite want to tackle the topic about the possibility of the U.S. attacking Iran, but maybe just a side comment about that. There's more and more information coming out about multiple advisors who are being put onto the, who are being applied to the task of thinking about the military.
Hold that thought right there, Andrew. Hold it, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and we were simply talking about what's going on and certainly the mistreatment of prisoners. And, of course, every American is responsible. If our leaders are doing that, then we should hold them to task. And if it means, demanding that the president either does what's right and morally correct, or there be a demand for impeachment. I'm not suggesting that we want to impeach the president. We should demand that he relieve the people in command who've authorized this sort of thing, and that would be one of his right-hand men, Don Rumsfeld, who apparently has authorized this. So, go ahead.
It's true. This process is called, it's a very euphemistic term. They call it rendition, or extraordinary rendition in this case. And this is simply a code word among the dark side of government for these people are going to be sentenced to interrogation. Now, as most people know, under the...
You're on a regular radio. Pardon me, are you on a regular handheld the telephone?
I am. Am I not coming through well?
Go ahead. If you're on a regular handheld telephone, we can't do much about it. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'll try to speak up.
All right. Go ahead.
You
were saying that they call this rendition. It's a fancy name for torture.
That's right. And it's a code name that most of the dark side of government understands, in that it means that certain people who are going to be sentenced to this form of treatment are going to be sent abroad. Now, the reason that they have to be sent abroad for rendition purposes is because under the Geneva Convention, there were rules that were set down by all of the so-called civilized nations, that even during times of war, the nations would agree not to participate in certain actions that were deemed terrible towards humanity. And under these Geneva Rules of Convention is most forms of torture.
I think it's really very interesting that we do know that certainly during the Second World War, pardon me, during the Vietnamese War, when the Vietnamese tortured our troops, and certainly some Koreans with the Pueblo, the Koreans actually tortured our troops, people on the Pueblo, and tortured them. And our people were infuriated against the Koreans. They were infuriated against the North Vietnamese for that treatment of our men. How do you think the Islamic people throughout the world, 1.2 billion people, feel when they know that we're torturing their people when we capture them? And many of these are not guilty at all. In fact, many of the people at Guantanamo have actually been released because they were found not to have been involved in any sort of illicit activity. I mean, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of these people who have been tortured, have been now released. They said, "Oh, shucks, well, you really didn't do anything. We're sorry." But what we've done is inflamed the entire Islamic world.
No, it's true. And some of the stories that have been causing inflammation, I think are absolutely true. There was a recent disclosure of two Yemeni men who both claimed separately, but their stories coincide, that they were both held in secret underground U.S. jails, both of them for more than 18 months. The story goes that the two men were arrested separately, but they both reported being held in almost identical conditions. One of them was arrested in Jordan, and the other over in Indonesia. But both were jailed in Jordan, where they were reportedly tortured. Each says that he was flown to an unnamed underground jail, where he was held in solitary confinement for at least 6 months. Then they were taken to a second underground jail. Amnesty International is bringing this to light, and they're, of course, doing this mostly to criticize the Bush administration. And they say, Amnesty Sharon Kritoff said, "To be disappeared from the face of the earth without knowing why or for how long is a crime under international law, and an experience no one should have to go through. We fear that we have heard from these two men is just one small part of a much broader picture of U.S. secret detentions around the world."
Well, at one time America had the moral high ground. People looked to America as a Christian country, the leader of the world.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people look at America and say, if that's what Christianity is about, I don't want anything to do with it.
It's true, and that's exactly, I think, what the entire purpose of it is. They have tainted the good name of the United States, which, for the most part, permeates most of the world. People don't hate us because of our good standards, like Bush says. They hate us because of the way the Bush administration twists other countries' arms and also, participate in these illegal activities which we, the general U.S. population, don't see, which all of the other countries suspect and then find out is true.
I fear the Bush administration is going to totally discredit Christianity throughout the world.
I agree.
Really fear that, and I can't imagine that they could be that stupid unintentionally. They do not have to treat people, human beings, that way, because every one of those Muslims, whether they agree with their religion or not, is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. And is that the way you really think that they should be treated by a moral Christian nation?
Absolutely not. It's interesting that you mentioned that the standard line is that this is just a matter of stupidity, that the leaders don't know exactly how the detainees are being treated. And we find out now that this isn't quite true, or isn't true at all. The Cleveland Plain Dealer pointed this out in an article. They say that the order to torture came down from the top. The pyramid of power, first and foremost, was President Bush's January 25th, 2002 executive order disavowing the Geneva Conventions for the new kind of war we are fighting. Moreover, then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez, now the Attorney General, assisted in writing the 2002 memo, which also asserted the Geneva Conventions, respected worldwide, were quaint and obsolete.
Well, then, of course, it wouldn't apply to our men either, would it?
Exactly.
How could we possibly justify, how could we possibly complain if they tortured our men or killed them indiscriminately?
Yeah. Newsweek recently reported that there was a leak from the opposite side, that two FBI agents leaked an FBI memo that that pointedly questions the legality of the Bush administration's policy of extraordinary rendition. Newsweek talked about this. They say a strongly worded memo written by an FBI supervisor then assigned to Guantanamo is the latest in a series of documents that have recently surfaced reflecting unease among some government lawyers and FBI agents over tactics used in the war on terror. This memo appears to be the first that directly questions the legal premises of the Bush administration's policy of extraordinary rendition, a secret program under which terror suspects are transferred to foreign countries that have been widely criticized for practicing torture. Senior FBI official, who asked not to be identified because the issue is sensitive, said the memo was not an official Bureau legal conclusion. Its author was at Guantanamo to advise on interrogation techniques, not to render legal opinion. Anyway, so the leaks are coming from both sides, both from previous detainees as well as from some of the officials in government, like the FBI, who are aware of these.
One of the things that really disturbed me is that two military officers in the Judge Advocate General's Corps, they're both lawyers, military lawyers, professional soldiers, have come out and publicly criticized the policies that are being carried out and the trials are being carried out at Guantanamo, saying that the prosecutor had said, we're going to actually pick four people and we're going to convict them and we're not going to give them access to an adequate defense, and they are to be convicted. And the defense attorney said, you can't run a trial that way. And they were told that that was the way it was going to be run. And these men have risked their military careers and their future in the profession by saying, this is wrong and we're not going to go along with it. Now, it takes a lot of courage on the part of a lawyer to do that, because that's the end of his career in the military when he speaks out for righteousness. But, you know, there are some good and honest people. The trouble is there's some terribly wicked people in positions of authority. And you can find those articles. I'm sure you're well aware of those articles, Andrew. Go ahead.
I think that you're talking about Major Robert Preston and Captain John Carr.
Right.
Yeah, the Democracy Now! was talking about an article about them in the New York Times. These are two government prosecutors who complained last year that the military commissions being set up to try detainees were a little more than kangaroo court. The prosecutors complained that the trial system was being secretly arranged to improve the chance of conviction.
And to deprive these people of the right to defend themselves.
Yes, right, and of the material that would prove their innocence. And so these two people came forward and said that they believed the process was rigged and was pursuing marginal issues. There was also a third military prosecutor who just this week resigned for the same reason.
And so I think that you're seeing a military officer saying the system is corrupt. Well, if the system is corrupt, then it's corrupt all the way to the very top. And if these people who are rigging the trials are not brought before the bar of justice themselves, then no man's life or family or freedom are safe in America today. And this is the problem that we're really facing, and the average person has no idea what's going on. Unless, of course, you're going to World Affairs Brief and pulling down these articles, or do as I do, and that's read about six newspapers every day, and as well as scanning several of the major news magazines. So, ladies and gentlemen, our plea to you is get the information, and then, of course, help us to get it out across America. Because, of course, once you lose the moral high ground, once you begin resorting to torture and rigged trials, how is our system any different than they have in the Soviet Union? And it doesn't have to be that way if we can reclaim our nation for righteousness and for our Lord. Well, Andrew, go right ahead. And where do we go from here?
All right. Well, I think we can move on. This issue is one that is not going to go away for a while, and I'm sure that it's going to be a recurring issue here at the World Affairs Brief. We'll try to do our best to keep track of issues like these and to bring them to the forefront and piece them together as best we can as more information becomes available. I'd like to jump to a different subject, although related to the same part of the world. Let's talk a little bit about the change in politics that have recently occurred in Saudi Arabia. Now, I think most people who have been watching the news know that the king of Saudi Arabia recently died. This was King Fahd. And there's a very cogent article written by Sami Mujahid, who is writing for the Asia Times. For people who aren't familiar with the Asia Times, they have some of the most cogent analysis of the things going on around the world that we have found so far, and they're becoming a very reputable news source.
And I would simply point out that you cannot believe the things you read in the American media because they're controlled by five mega corporations, almost all of our major outlets. So Asia Times is an independent publication. They publish a newspaper, but they also have a website, and I certainly agree with Andrew. An excellent sort of information, source of information. Anyway, what did this recent article have to say about King Saud?
Well,
is it Fahd or Saud? I can't remember which one.
It's Fahd, F-A-H-D.
All right, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, he talks about, he goes through some of the history, and I think that much of the article is worth commenting on. He says that King Fahd was born in Riyadh in 1923. While he was still a teenager, his father was the one who united the Arabian Peninsula and ousted its former sovereign, King Hussein, who, if you examine some of the history books, King Hussein was actually set up in that position after World War I by the British. He was mostly a puppet. And the great-grandfather of Jordan's current King Abdullah from the Arabian Desert was King Hussein. Now, King Abd al-Aziz al-Saud was the one who actually united the kingdom of Saudi Arabia through some very ruthless infighting. The Saudi people often don't get along with each other real well, especially in matters of politics, and so it takes a very ruthless person to bring them together into some kind of unity.
And of course, basically, the family, the royal family, are Sunni Muslims, and of course, well over half the population are Shia Muslims, and they're second-class citizens in that society that we've been supporting for so long.
That's right, exactly. So this king who united the kingdom named it Saudi Arabia in 1932 after himself, of course. King Fahd studied at the Princess School in Riyadh, with a heavy emphasis on Islam. This was mostly a show of education. In 1945, he began his career by attending the founding conference of the United Nations in the U.S.
We're going to have to hold that because we're going to bring our stations right back on board right about now.
Great.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen, and we're talking about the new succession of power in Saudi Arabia, and Andrew had gone in the background of how Ibn Saud had actually created the state of Saudi Arabia in about 1932 and arranged it, named it after himself, Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, the current king had gone into Islamic schools over there and been trained, and of course, pick up the story there.
Well, it's very interesting to see how the globalists attempted to play these kings along. They were there. They invited them as if they were big important players to the conference of the United Nations in 1945 when the United Nations was established. They were trying to make the Arabs believe that they were big players in big leagues after establishing the country of Saudi Arabia. But most of the globalists kind of think of them as just that people to be manipulated for the right ends in history, and the Arabs sort of set themselves up in a way that they are partially susceptible to certain stimuli, and I think we see this now in the form that they are reacting so strongly with hatred towards the actions of the United States.
But this, of course, right, because of their Muslim beliefs and their resentment of a Christian nation. And yet the Saudis are very heavily invested in the United States, almost to the tune of, at least in one book we've read, to the tune of about $800 billion. You're talking almost $1 trillion of Saudi money here in the United States today. So pick up the story there.
Okay. Well, after this country was established, King Faisal was assassinated, and his brother King Khalid assumed the throne. Saud became the next in line, and when Khalid died on June 13, 1982, Saud became the fifth king of Saudi Arabia. At this point, it was pretty fairly established that this was the line of monarchies. There wasn't a great deal of infighting at this time, but there was certainly still a lot of political factions between these. But Saud's rule was pretty much established, and during that rule, the Age of Times reports that his rule was marked with a degree of prosperity, modernity, and stability. Shaken recently by after September 11th with Al-Qaeda bombings and terrorist attacks inside of Saudi Arabia. Now, it's sort of suspicious that these attacks are claimed by Al-Qaeda. In fact, I think, or we here at the World Affairs Brief think that many of the dissenting factions for power have been causing these explosions and terrorist attacks as a under the name of Al-Qaeda as sort of a vehicle to their own ends. So I think that many of the countries around the world are learning to use the same famous words of Al-Qaeda to be able to get certain ends accomplished whenever they want to use violence.
Are you suggesting that some of these attacks in Saudi Arabia are actually engineered by intelligence agencies outside there to destabilize the government?
That's true as well, although I think that some of them come internally as well. There are several factions who are fighting against each other inside of Saudi Arabia itself, many of which are independent. Well, I'm not sure actually if they are completely independent of foreign influence, but there are definitely factions inside of Saudi Arabia itself that are fighting.
And so basically what you're seeing then is a conscious effort to destabilize the Saudi monarchy, and a lot of this,
exactly,
of course, has its foundation in this radical form of Islam. Would that be a fair statement?
That's correct.
All right, fine. You have to understand that when the United States began to fund the Islamic fundamentalists during the Afghan War, we created this whole radical Islamic movement. We poured money in, we distributed Korans, we provided textbooks in Afghanistan to push this active resurgence and rebirth of this radical form of Islam, which really wasn't much of a factor outside of the clerics in Saudi Arabia and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. We created the best enemy, American tax dollars. Goodbye. And now we're wondering why, of course, it continues and why it's changed from a hatred of the Soviet now to hatred of the United States and the Saudi regime. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Andrew Skousen. Andrew, why don't you pick up the story there anyway, giving us the background of what's going on. Of course, now King Fahd is dead, and of course, what's going to happen in Saudi Arabia? Is there going to be a period of instability now, or will the new king be able to maintain law and order there?
Right, so the previous crown prince, Abdullah, has now risen to power, and now the king of Saudi Arabia. Abdullah has long been the subject of speculation in the Arab world and abroad, of course. Many consider him a strong Arab nationalist and very anti-Western. Age of Times here says that the trait of being anti-Western is a little inflated by the Arab street and media. They say it stems from his refusal to permit the U.S. to use Saudi territory for the war in Afghanistan in 2001 and Iraq in 2003. However, we here at the World Affairs Brief think that, in fact, the anti-American sentiment of the current King Abdullah is, in fact, very much real. He is, though, a pragmatist. He understands the necessity in today's world politics of dealing with the superpowers, and particularly the ones who are so involved with other people's affairs. And the U.S. has long since made it clear that you have to play ball with the U.S. in order to make it, both politically and economically, and they use that as leverage with all of the leaders of all these different countries. So Abdullah realizes he has to play along with the U.S., but there's quite a bit of opinion here at the World Affairs Brief that he is more aligned with the Moscow side of influence and philosophy, and is more tending towards taking their globalist leads from that source rather than from the U.S., where he has opportunity, of course. Now, many people say that he softened towards the U.S. after the September 11 attacks, and certainly he tried to soothe relations with the U.S. He sent a Saudi ambassador to Washington. He sent Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Now, it's...
Hold that thought there, Andrew. We're going to bring the stations back on board here in just one moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Andrew Skousen, and he's commenting that, of course, now that the king of Saudi Arabia is dead, that Prince Abdullah has taken the reins of power. Prince Abdullah is really not a friend of the United States, although he'll pretend to be. And he seems to be more willing to align himself with the Soviet Union rather than the Americans, because he just doesn't trust the Americans. And, of course, you have to understand that there has been really for many, many decades, a very close alliance with the radical Islamic fundamentalists and the Soviet Union. They've worked together. In fact, it's just as there was an alliance between the Islamic leaders and the Nazis. They both approach things from a totalitarian point of view, and even more than that, I believe the same occult forces that energizes the Muslim religion energized the Nazi religion. But be that as it may, until people understand that behind everything going on there are spiritual forces, nothing really makes sense. Well, Andrew, pick up the story there. You were saying that it would appear that the Prince Abdullah now seems to be aligning more with Russia than with the United States?
It's true. And to sort of illustrate what we think we've traced down to two interesting infighters in the region right now is between Abdullah and Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Now, Bandar is a very interesting person. After September 11th, he was sent as the Saudi ambassador to Washington on behalf of Crown Prince Abdullah. Then Crown Prince Abdullah, now King Abdullah. And Bandar, who is Abdullah's nephew, took up this job in 1983 and kept the post until stepping down last July. The current, I'm trying to give people a picture of exactly what the political chain or pyramid to ascension to the throne in Saudi Arabia looks like right now. There's the current king, which is Abdullah, and then there is the next person in line, which is the crown prince Sultan. This is Bandar's father. And after Bandar's father, then Bandar himself is in line to the throne.
And so I think for people, I think our listeners have to know that Prince Bandar, anyway, he was the American ambassador. Now he's resigned as American ambassador, moved back to Saudi Arabia. So then he is sort of in line to, for what, third man down to become the king?
Exactly. Although his father is fairly ailing in health, and so he is principally the opposition leader, if there was one there. And Bandar is a very interesting person. He's probably the one Arab who is this high up in power who has been very closely aligned with the globalist elite over in the U.S.
In fact, we saw pictures of him recently holding hands with the president, and this was within the last month. Jay Leno actually showed a clip, and here is Prince Bandar holding hands and walking along with George Bush. So obviously they're pretty close to one another.
It is. Bandar has been to the Oval Office with many U.S. presidents, in fact, both as a friend, a diplomat, and an advisor. After September 11th, he toured the U.S. holding face-to-face meetings with U.S. citizens in a show to reduce criticism of Saudi Arabia, which was at the time, of course, known to angry Americans only as the home to 15 of the 19 terrorist attacks.
And of course, there's no question at all that much of the money that went into financing 9/11 came from Saudi Arabia, just as the majority of the insurgents who are killing our men over in Iraq today coming from Saudi Arabia, financed from Saudi Arabia. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, anyway, pick up the story.
That's right. No, I think that's a very good point to make. Much of the evidence that has surfaced about the CIA channeling funds directly to Osama bin Laden through Saudi Arabia came through the same source and through Saudi Arabia itself. Bandar has set himself up as a good friend of the Bush family, particularly the elder Bush, and many people refer to him as Bandar Bush. Now, you may recall, Stan, that just after 9/11, there were some reports that leaked out that even though all of the airlines were shut down, Osama bin Laden's clan, his kin, and his extended family were flown out of the United States on specially chartered planes. We here at the World Affairs Brief believe that it was most likely Bandar who helped coordinate that.
And of course, they were, when all domestic planes were grounded, white planes were allowed to actually pick up the members of the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family and take them to a central place where then they were allowed to fly out on private jets back to the safety of Saudi Arabia, because they feared that there would be a backlash against the family of the man who, we were told, was responsible for the 9/11 attack.
That's right. Now, as far as the current state of politics, there's quite a few stories that have been circulating that there is a rivalry between Bandar and Abdullah. They say that Bandar and Abdullah hate each other, and that Bandar's father, the current crown prince, had his eyes set on the throne. Many people believed he would use his armed forces to try to wrest it from Abdullah when Fahd died. This hasn't turned out to be true. And they say that they've tried to put Bandar into a senior job in domestic Saudi politics. But Bandar is easily part of the globalist establishment and quite well established there. And the Moscow globalist side coming through Abdullah, and the U.S. globalist side that is, I mean, there's basically two major factions here, and one is finding an ear to pull in Bandar, and the other one has the ear of Abdullah, and so there's been quite a bit of unseen tension here, we think, because of this. Now, Bandar is not very popular in Saudi Arabia. This is mostly because it's pretty well known what his extravagant lifestyle was in the U.S., and obviously anyone associated with the U.S. at this time is quite tainted. This alienates most of the conservatives, all of the fanatics there, of course, and many of the emerging middle class. Many people are becoming more aware of the moral corruption of the royal family, and Bandar is kind of lumped in with this same corruption. The Saudi public many of the Saudi public are aware that while Bandar was in the U.S., he was very free with much of the $1 million of wealth that he had. He has been reported back in Saudi Arabia donating $1 million to Barbara Bush to combat illiteracy, and $1 million to Nancy Reagan for the Just Say No anti-drug campaign. And the Saudis and Arabs in general are quite displeased with this. They argue that Palestinians, Iraqis, and other miserable Arabs are much more worthy of this generosity that he was giving out in America to his own pet causes.
Of course, it should be pretty obvious that he is buying favor with Nancy Reagan and with Barbara Bush.
Exactly.
So from that point of view, you have to understand that money talks, and it really talks very, very loudly. And when you give $1 million to Barbara Bush, you buy favor with the Bush family. When you give $1 million to Nancy Reagan, to some foundation, you buy favor with the widow of a very, very popular president. So Bandar is certainly not giving money away just because he wants to. But he's buying favor, and this is what the Saudis always do. They buy the support and the friendship of key people in our government. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
That's right. I absolutely agree. And the source of power in Saudi Arabia, of course, mostly comes from popularity among people, as well as being in line to the throne, which has certain rules and restrictions about it, of course. But there's sort of two ways of getting this power. I think that the first is through the normal means and through gaining popularity among the people, and the other is to gain popularity with the U.S., which holds still considerable clout there, and can make quite an influence about who has power and who doesn't. I think that Bandar has taken the U.S. route to power. He's of course, as we just mentioned, curried a great deal of favor through American politics and through the conservative Bush families and the Reagan clan, and has come up through the globalist ranks through the U.S. side. And he is considered one of the most powerful and influential people in the post-Fah era. So it will be very interesting to see what happens. Of course, secession in Saudi Arabia is based on hereditary line in the House of Saud. Power is handed down among the sons of the kingdom's father. And that, of course, came down through King Al-Aziz, and then King Fahd. And King Fahd had a stroke when he was still in power and became quite incapable of ruling, and so Crown Prince Abdullah stepped in and was actually ruling probably for the past 6 to 8 years of King Fahd's life, and was basically the de facto ruler during that time. I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen very much unrest in Saudi Arabia during this transition. It's not that there aren't a lot of people, I think, are now biding their time.
And, of course, I think it's important for people to realize that Abdullah is not necessarily a friend of America. He may smile at us, but he really doesn't like us.
Exactly. King Abdullah, at this time, is already 81 years old, and so he is getting on in years. It'll be interesting to see how things develop under his rule, since he now has ultimate power directly. But how it will also be interesting to see how Bandar becomes positioned in Shahid, and whether or not the U.S. will try to influence things in their favor by trying to get Bandar into a more powerful political position.
Well, you know very well that we're going to try to, get Bandar into a political position. You know, if he's affiliated with the globalists, just exactly as today, we're spending countless millions of dollars trying to undermine the Iranian government. Now, if somebody was spending millions of dollars trying to undermine the American government, we would be furious with that, consider that an act of war. But that's exactly what we're doing in Iran. In fact, that's what we're doing in countries all throughout the Middle East. I mean, we're funding both the Palestinians and the Israelis and the Egyptians. And, you know, we're putting money out there. And, of course, we're providing weapons to the Palestinians, and we're providing weapons to the Israelis. It doesn't make sense, but that's exactly what we're doing. We're doing everything we can to destabilize that whole region. In Iraq today, if you really wanted to solve the problem, you'd break it into three separate states. Give the Kurds their government, give the Sunnis their government, give the Shia Muslims their government, and then they could work out their government on their own. To hold the three factions who hate one another together only ensures continued instability, and that's exactly what we want.
That's right. And the instability in Saudi Arabia, I think it's going to be something that I think is going to become more and more pronounced. I think it's going to be easier and easier to see. Right now, it seems like a very stable country. Most people view it as a solid place for trade and getting oil at this time. And King Fahd actually did a great deal towards encouraging that. He built up a lot of facade-type infrastructure, but without incorporating some of the major economic changes that are required for fundamental changes that bring about a solid foundation for improving the society in general with the free market reforms, etc. And that did not happen. So most of it is just facade built up by the wealth accrued through oil. Just as I think a closing comment about this. There is a lot of advanced age and a great deal of medical conditions involved with the generation of Saudi royals, and it is likely that a king will die every 2 or 3 years with what remains of the solid line of the current Saudi family. Because of the levels of infighting that are taking place right now, in our opinion, we think that as the first signs of the royal family start cracking and the lineage gets spaced further and further apart, it's probably only a matter of time until fundamentalism explodes in Arab and in Arabia, and the royal family is toppled for good, and then we'll probably see street riots and an internal coup.
But, of course, that will have a profound impact on America because we're so dependent upon Saudi oil. And if that would happen, we would almost have to move in militarily to take over Saudi Arabia to protect our access to the oil supply.
And if that does happen, it would exacerbate to a great deal the opinion of the Muslim world, and there would probably be a major backlash.
In fact, if we were to occupy Saudi Arabia, where the Mecca is, and of course the Black Stone, why this would really inflame the Muslims of the world, and yet we would have almost no option to do that, because we couldn't let that go into chaos, and we couldn't, of course, let that fall under the control of the Chinese communists, the Russian communists. So You know, things are really moving, I believe, in the Middle East from bad to worse. Don't you sort of see that coming down the line there as well?
I do, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that.
Let's get your telephone number out right now. How can people get in touch with you?
All right. If people call toll-free 1-877-518-5888, they can order a copy of the World Affairs Brief.
Give that number one more time.
Toll-free 1-877-518-5888.
And that's for the World Affairs Brief. Well, Andrew, why don't you give the website so people would know how they can get in touch with you?
Okay. Our website is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's all one word, worldaffairsbrief.com. And if people log in there, they will be able to read the first major story in this week's World Affairs Brief, which is talking about the secret underground prisons and jails and what we talked about with the Guantanamo revelation that has come out recently. But also, importantly, they can find links to what we consider some of the most important stories out there at this time. We have researchers who search through all the major sources of information that we think are reputable or stories that we think provide a good point of view about current events. And so the website acts as a hub with all kinds of links, and there are short summaries that people can read about what we think are the most important stories. And if people would like a summary and kind of a form where all of the different news articles are pieced together, and we try to make sense of them and where things are going, they can sign up for the World Affairs Brief, which is a publication that's put out once a week, written mostly by my father and by the rest of the editors here at the World Affairs Brief. And that is put out, like I said, once a week, and you can order a free copy of that by calling that toll-free number I gave out before.
And give that number just one more time.
Okay, that's area code toll-free 877-518-5888.
All right, fine. Well, I guess this evening has been Andrew Skousen of World Affairs Brief, and I think it's fascinating as we see what's happening as far as the CIA sending people all over the world to be tortured. I think it's fascinating as we look and we see what's happening in Saudi Arabia, and we realize that this once very stable nation now certainly is on the edge, perhaps, of beginning to break down. If you don't have, you know, full support behind the monarchy there, if there's dissension and infighting, who knows what could happen? And remember, America has put itself into a situation where we are not putting in oil wells here. We have lots of sources of oil. We're not allowed to tap. We've made ourselves totally dependent on their oil. We're not allowed to put in our nuclear power plants here. What do we do for electricity if our oil supply is shut off? What do we do for transportation if our oil supply is cut off? God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us, Andrew.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much. Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening has been Andrew Skousen, and I hope that you've enjoyed our conversation. Now, this is the time I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you would like to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours a day by radio and by internet and by satellite and by shortwave, we'd love to hear from you. And certainly, you can get in touch with us by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. How do we understand everything going on in the world today? We have to understand that there is a spiritual or occult hierarchy that rules the world. And behind everything that is taking place, there are powerful spiritual forces. If you'd like to get our newsletter on the occult hierarchy, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24. Pardon me. Our telephone number to get the free newsletter is 1 800 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of our latest newsletter on the Occult Hierarchy Part 2. You can go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com and get a copy of our Occult Hierarchy Part 1 and Part 2. And we hope that you'll copy the newsletters and that you'll get them to other people. And try to get them to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And if you don't understand that there are an elite group that rules the world and behind them powerful spiritual forces, then nothing going on in the world really makes sense. Now we hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com where you can actually listen to our radio programs on the internet. 5 hours a day, 3 hours there at www.radioliberty.com, and then links to the Genesis Network and to the American Freedom Network. And then, of course, if you have more time, you can actually listen to our archive programs, which are there for 10 days, actually probably supposed to be there for about 5 weeks. So you can listen to our older programs, and of course, we give you our permission to copy any of our radio programs, to copy any of the newsletters, and of course, if you have any of our 4 tape sets or videos we produced, you have our permission to copy those as well, as long as you're not making a profit on them. Our job is to try to educate the American people about the true nature of what's really going on today. Because back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created, every pattern good and wise. Oft perplexing by earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. Though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong. Though a portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong. But that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. And that, of course, is one of my favorite poems. It's actually 2 separate poems put together, but the last one was written by James Russell Lowell back in the 1840s. It's certainly one of the great poems of all time, and it was basically a poem was taken from the hymn that was written to correspond with it. That great hymn were once to every man and nation. So we hope you understand that behind everything going on is another world. There is a spiritual world. There is a spiritual entity out there. There is another dimension, and there really are beings from that other dimension. If you go into the internet and Google and type in occult hierarchy, you will get references to the Theosophical Society, which talks about the occult hierarchy that rules the world and their plan, with a capital P, for the New World Order and the New World Religion. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our ministers. And help us to get the truth out while we still can. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.